Welcome to the AP Now podcast, the podcast that covers trends, insights, and emerging issues impacting every accounts payable function. Your host, Mary Schaefer, is the founder of AP Now, a B2B digital information and learning company focused on all issues related to AP. Stay tuned as Mary and her guests discuss the business intelligence you need to ensure a cost-effective, technologically efficient, fraud-resistant, regulatory-compliant accounts payable function. Without further ado, let's dive right in.
Welcome to the 27th episode of the AP Now podcast. I'm Mary Schaefer from AP Now, and in this episode, we welcome Steve Mercatante, who's going to talk to us today about 1099 or information reporting misconceptions. Today's show is brought to you by Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. Welcome, Steve.
Hello.
Hi. Okay, so Steve, you know, you and I have known each other for some time. There's a picture of you doing a book signing, I see. But perhaps you could tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about how you ended up doing information reporting, a little bit about your service, because I think it's a really interesting and useful one, and then maybe even one or two words about this book that you've written.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm the principal and founder of TIR Consulting, and TIR is at this point kind of a nationally recognized leader in tax reporting, really education and some consulting on compliance issues as they come up, but more on the education side. And I do on-site consultation for corporate clients, as well as webinars and seminars for a variety of organizations, including my own. And the core of my service is something that I call the TIR Answer Center. And it's a subscription service where you can join up, basically you subscribe, and you can ask any 1099, 1042S, state reporting, sales and use, you know, expat stuff. I mean, I go on and on, but your basic types, different types of information reporting questions, and you'll get an answer back in writing in 2 business days or less. And then the subscription also gives you access to a database of, you know, several thousand curated questions, I guess I would say, where the identifying information from the questioner has been taken out. And then it goes into the database for everyone's benefit. And so you can go and there's, you know, a keyword searchable on the website, and you can hunt for the questions and then the answers other your peers in accounts payable or tax, or maybe you're a CPA that have asked. And then there's all kinds of tax tips and articles and other goodies that come with the subscription. And so that's what I do. And I've been doing this for quite a while. I moved more over into tax when I was working at Balance Consulting. Before that, I had done just general corporate law, which, you know, really is you're looking at contracts and labor and some tax issues, but not much. And then through Balance, you know, I went through there and was a speaker for Balance as well as one of the in-house attorneys. And then started my own company after Balance folded during the, quote, Great Recession over a decade ago. And so that's what I do. And it's really kind of crazy. I have an entire business built around literally just a few different information reporting forms. And they're affiliated forms.
But they're also very important and also not that easy to get done.
Correct. Yes. And the IRS is always changing things. So it's in constant flux. I mean, if things have been the same for the last 20 years, then all of my clients probably wouldn't need me that much. But things change every year. And because the IRS and the state level and international levels, everything's changing so much, and it's such a fluid environment, there's demand. And the other demand side comes actually not just from the changes, but the fact there's a lot of a gray area in information reporting. It's incredibly subjective. And you're kind of doing this dance where you have to establish your performing your due diligence under the law and documenting that, and then getting the filing right. And so you're trying to accomplish these two things, and it's really this hand-in-hand process. And you have to have sound reasons. You have to base your decision-making in regard to your compliance activities or your filing requirements on an understanding of the law. And that's different depending upon your facts and circumstances versus somebody else's. And so you could change one fact in a situation, and it's going to completely change how the reporting should be done in terms of the form or the box or whatever it may be. And if you get that wrong, that's a big problem, because the IRS then, you know, everyone thinks about an audit, but more likely you have a penalty notice is probably more common, unless you're at a large organization. If you're at a large organization, your chances of being audited are really, really high.
Ooh.
We could talk more about that. But the other thing before I get back to the audits is that there's also, in terms of efficiency and how you do your job. So there's a lot of stuff that a regulator will throw at you that may not be a penalty or an audit, but they'll still bog things down, like responding to a B notice and going down that route. Or maybe you have to back up withhold for a payee that refuses to provide their TIN, their taxpayer identification number. And that stuff's all a pain in the neck. And then, of course, you have corrections and voids to deal with that surround filing. And you have, of course, you're trying to keep up on the law and figure out what's changed. And then there's new forms that come out. So how does that get worked into the equation? And there's always a blizzard of questions around that. And then, like I said, audits. And a lot of people listening in, they think, well, audits aren't so bad lately. And that's true if you're an individual. So like me as an individual, or you as an individual, mm-hmm. your odds of getting audited are pretty much lower than they've been in any point in recent mm-hmm. memory, in a very long time. But what the IRS has done is they focus their enforcement activities on typically the organizations you might work for, if you're mm-hmm. in accounts payable or you're in tax. And so if you're what the IRS defines as a large sized organization, and they look at organizations with $20 million in assets or more, which, as you well know, in the corporate world isn't all that much.
No, it's not.
Then, yeah, the odds of getting audited are just through the ceiling. And in fact, the IRS just issued a report the other week, and they were talking about how they collected more enforcement revenue in tax year 2018 than any other year in history, set a record. And again, this is counterintuitive, because people who are kind of paying attention to what's going on with the IRS will say, well, geez, their budget was froze for a decade,
right.
which effectively is a cut with inflation.
Right.
But
right.
It doesn't matter, because what they've been doing is in terms of trying to close the annual tax gap, they've been hiking enforcement. And the tax gap, by the way, that's just the difference between what the federal government's owed from taxpayers like the organizations you work for and what it takes in. And the IRS really has honed in on the underreporting of income amongst, you know, businesses, mm-hmm. corporations, all kinds of universities, hospitals, all kinds of organizations, is among the biggest reasons for that gap. And that's because, you know, the organization, you know, you listening in might work for is going to have hundreds or thousands of vendors. So mm-hmm. if you're not issuing your 1099s, the odds
right.
of them reporting are lower. And so, and the IRS budget has actually been, in real terms, has been cut until, ironically, the last 2 years, when it's actually finally started going up again.
Mm-hmm.
But what they've done over the last decade is, in response to that, is they've really shut down other parts of the IRS that also makes your job harder.
Right.
And so, for example, we had that shutdown.
Right.
So that ended in January, and everyone's like, okay, we're back to normal, but not for the IRS. I mean, that significantly delayed training for IRS personnel, especially new hires who were replacing. They lost a ton of experienced people during the shutdown who were just fed up with it.
Yeah.
And done and left, and that hurts. And it hurts you, not just the IRS.
Right.
Because they're way behind on crafting the regulations that explain even the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act
right.
that was passed December of 2017. they still haven't written more than a third of the regulations they needed to have written to explain how those different aspects of the law are going to be implemented.
Right. We could probably
top
spend
of that. Oh, sorry.
We
go
could
ahead.
Probably spend a whole hour talking about lavish and extravagant.
Yes. Yeah. And so when it comes to fringe benefits, I mean, that's just been, they finally issued some guidance late last year. In my opinion, it was inadequate, especially in relation to meal reimbursements and how that fits in. And again, it puts a lot of the burden on you.
Right.
And so if you're not doing things right, if your record keeping's not up to snuff, if you're not documenting things appropriately, if you're not following, for example, closely adhering to accountable plan best practices and things like that, then your organization is the one that's going to get audited and is going to deal with these issues. And on top of that, it's really hard in today's day and age because the IRS has dramatically cut taxpayer support services.
Yeah.
So,
but that's good,
you know,
for
when
your
I was
business.
First starting out. Well, yeah, but when I was starting, well, I mean, it was kind of a sketchy thing anyways, to be fair. But when I was starting out, people would be like, oh, yeah, you could just call Martinsburg. That's an IRS campus. I believe it's in West Virginia.
Yeah, it is.
Where a lot of that was located, the taxpayer support. Mm-hmm. The problem was, though, people would call in and, you know, as a fun experiment, if you had a question and you called in 10 times in a row and asked 10 different people, you might just get 10 different answers. but at least you were getting something that would move you down the path,
right?
Put you in the direction you needed to go to figure things out.
Right.
And they've dramatically cut taxpayer support. And in fact, 5 years ago, they put in place a policy under which they would only answer tax law questions during the filing season, while narrowing the scope of questions they would answer by dramatically broadening their out-of-scope topic list.
Right, right.
And this was all justified on the altar of cost saving. But that means getting answers to your questions has just been shot. And now they've been increasing their budget. So the National Taxpayer Advocate reported in June, if you don't know this, there's a National Taxpayer Advocate. And for the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, I think, maybe even decade, it's been a person named Nina Olson. And so she's required under the law to release annual reports to Congress on the state of IRS services. And according to her report that she released in June, things aren't about to get any better. And in fact, the budget proposal for fiscal year 2020, which starts basically next week, requested an increase of 5% for enforcement. So we see enforcement going up again. But on top of that, they asked for a decrease of 6.5% in taxpayer services funding. So the key there is to note that the IRS, they're not looking to add staff to tax support services. And so they're continuing to cut there. And if you're in accounts payable or tax, it's really important you understand that, because all too often people focus on the top line numbers regarding flat IRS budgets,
right,
which again mean cuts after factoring in inflation,
right,
and miss the fact that if you drill down into the details, enforcement's been up, not for you and I as individuals, but for the organizations we work for, or maybe you're a CPA and the organization you work for in that regard. And so it's more likely that those organizations will be audited. Another report the IRS put out, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, they were stating that they were auditing large organizations. It was in tax year 2016 at a 78% rate.
Ooh.
I mean, that's almost guaranteed. That's almost a slam dunk. If you work at a major university or a hospital or a multinational corporation, or even smaller than that. I mean, $20 million in total assets is your local community college.
Right.
You know, I mean, or it could be an auto repair company. It doesn't have to be a large organization, and they're all getting audited. And keep in mind, that figure does not include B notices or penalty notices or corrections.
Right.
Or all the other stuff that makes, you know, that intrudes on your ability to do your day-to-day accounts payable job that Mary Schaefer helps so much with, trying to help you guys, you know, be more efficient on that end.
Didn't they announce?
What I do is just a chunk of it.
Didn't they also announce that they were going to audit everybody involved with cryptocurrencies?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I mean, that's just a complete boondoggle, but
No
I
bias
would
there,
not be
right, Steve?
surprised. But yeah, I mean, that's just, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on out there that's just completely like, I can't believe people are doing this. But yeah, that's definitely something. They're actually across the board, they're looking at stuff associated with quote tech more lately, which is good because traditionally the IRS has been really behind the times. Which is also not good because then they try to catch up and they pass a bunch of laws, but then if they don't write the regs, you're flailing out there trying to figure out how to comply with the law, which you got to do. I mean, it's a whole, it's like speeding. You can't say, "Oh, I didn't see the speed limit sign."
Too
That
bad.
doesn't hold water. It's too bad. You're expected to know. And that makes it really hard because you're not only expected to keep up with the changes in the law and how they impact your accounts payable job, but you're expected to then know how to respond to that depending upon the particular situation you might face with this payee over here versus this payment type or payee over there. And it could be very different, even though you're both, both of them are maybe a 1099 question.
So, Steve, we need to take a moment to have a word from our sponsor, and then I have another question for you about those calls to Martinsburg or wherever, and the advice. So, can you hang tight for a minute?
Yeah.
So, AP professionals know invoices are easy to lose, and it takes time to track down approvers while also having to code, log, cross-reference, verify, reconcile, and cut checks, all while staying compliant. Stamply simplifies that. When invoices enter the system, Stamply's AI, called Billy the Bot, immediately gets to work by proposing GL codes, approvers, and flagging issues like PO mismatches and potential duplicates. AP simply confirms the information is correct and submits the invoice for approval. Here's the best part. Stamply fixes the disconnected communications between approvers, AP, and vendors. With Stamply, conversations are centered around each invoice, and anyone can be invited into the conversation, getting to an approval decision up to 5 times faster. Visit stamply.com/AP now. See for yourself how your teams can work smarter, not harder. That's stamply.com/AP now. Okay, Steve. So let's say I called Martinsburg, or I called the IRS, doesn't have to be Martinsburg, and I asked a question and I get an answer, and I take that answer and I use it in filing my 1099s, issuing my 1099s. And then I get a B notice and it says I did something wrong. And so I get into a discussion with the IRS and I say, but I called and this is what your person told me to do. And the person handling the audit or the examination says, well, that was wrong. Do you have any recourse?
No, especially because you also didn't get your answer in writing.
Do they
An
give me?
auditor doesn't, I mean, they don't care what you say. It's all show, don't tell. So if you can't document, you have to document the path you took and you have to document a number of things. But in particular, I mean, you have to really drill down and that's the other problem with the verbally responded. The answers that are provided orally is that if you don't have an answer in writing, it's not one the IRS really allows you to rely upon in an audit perspective. And they do that a lot in their fine print. They might say, well, you can eyeball, someone as having corporate status. But if you don't have the writing and the auditor says, well, why didn't you report to that, report that payment to them? And then you turn around and say, well, because they're a corporation, they're going to say, well, what are you relying upon? And so, I mean, it could be something as simple as having an invoice on file or letterhead or whatever it may be. But those would be things you would need to be able to produce. You would need to be able to produce the writing. And when you get guidance, you also have to be able to prove that the guidance was in response to a specific request. And the advice received not only related to it, but you also have to show that you followed up and relied on the advice. And so if you didn't do that and or you can't prove, you know, show that path. It's almost like math. You got to show your
show your
thought
work.
process. Yeah, you got to show your work. It's not enough to just to provide the answer. And so that could invalidate, then not doing that can invalidate the advice received. And so, you know, I mean, that's the big problem with that. It's one of the most important reasons you want to get not only written advice, but you also want to show, you know, ordinary business care and prudence and relying
right,
on the
right,
advice.
Right.
You got to do things like showing a relationship between your situation, the advice provided, and then the outcome. And so if the IRS is saying, well, the outcome is you filed wrong, then you have to be able to show that path, that you took that path. Because then if you do that, you could argue for a waiver, for example.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, so, you know, it's tough because and the problem is you can never say, you know, well, somebody else told me, okay? What you can do is if you have a writing from a respected, for example, authority, I mean, so either it could be a CPA, it could be an attorney, you know, it could be like my organization mm-hmm. or something, but you take that writing, that's why we give our answers in writing.
Okay.
You know,
yes.
You log on, there's a web form, but you take that, you put it in the file, and you say, well, this is some guidance we got that we relied upon. It's harder to do that if it's a phone conversation, and that's the trick. Or like, for example, I answer questions all the time in webinars.
Right.
And the answers I give are valid, but the problem is, you know, if an auditor came back and you said, well, I heard it in a webinar, that's not good enough. You would have to go and take the next step. You would have to then go, and this is where it gets tricky and this is where it gets hard. You know, you have to track down your authority, basically, for your actions. So mm-hmm. I heard it in a webinar, and that led me to research, you know, IRS Publication 15 or 78 or 1220 or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then that led me to Internal Revenue Code section, blah, blah, blah. You know, it could be 6041 mm-hmm. or 6109 or 3406 or whatever. And then I took that information and said, okay, this is what the law is telling me. This is the circumstances I have. So let me apply my circumstances to these rules and see how it works. And you literally have to be able to show you that kind of thought process if you're being assessed a penalty or something like that, and you're trying to get it waived. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff that goes into that. I mean, I'm giving you the bare bones version
right,
of it,
right.
But I mean, I just did an entire webinar, you know, a week ago on getting penalties waived.
Right.
So that was an hour and 40 minutes straight where I was talking about that. But, you know, it's a big process.
So let me ask you this. How easy or not easy is it to get an opinion from the IRS in writing? So if I'm, you know, Joe Blow on the street calling up, doing my personal taxes, if I call up, I'm not going to get a response from them in writing, am I?
You can. It's called a private letter request.
Okay.
Typically, and you'll see those, the IRS will publish those every once in a while, the answers to those on their website, and you can look at them, but typically organizations will pay thousands of dollars
right.
To get one of those, and it takes time. And then they'll come back, you know, the IRS will come back with, it's basically a legal memorandum that, you know, that applies to the situation that was being asked about and clarifies what should or shouldn't have been done.
Mm-hmm.
Or should be done going forward, depending upon the nature of the request. And
mm-hmm.
and so that's something that can be done, but it's, you know, it's clunky, it's a process, it takes a lot of time. And if it's like, you know, January 7th and you got to get your 1099 box 7 filing done in 2.5 weeks, you know, or 3 weeks, whatever that is,
yeah,
you know, you're not going to get that answer to that private letter request until the summer.
Right, so that's,
you're
in trouble, but yeah.
Yeah, you're in trouble by that point, which is, again, why, though, tying back to general accounts payable practices, it's always important to have policies and procedures
right.
in place that are proactive,
right.
that address these issues ahead of time. Like, for example, now, this is what, you know, I mean, I just did a webinar last week, and it was called Year-End 1099
mm-hmm.
Reporting, and it's like, well, it's September. It's
right.
effectively the end of the year when it comes to reporting season, because this is the time of the year when you should be aggressively going through and validating your vendor files before it comes time to do the actual reporting whenever the IRS comes back from its Christmas break, which is normally around January 10th.
Yeah.
And so I
can,
you know,
tell you, Steve, that, you know, we have all we have several different 1099 programs. You know, you do some of them for us, or you do all of them for us, actually. And you know which ones are best attended? The ones in December.
Yeah, and so, I mean, and I get that. I get the reality of, like, you know, 1099 compliance is only a part of what you do
right.
in your day-to-day job. And it's the most annoying part, probably,
right.
because,
sales
you know,
and
you
use
have...
taxes right up there.
Right, but, yes, yeah, so you have state-level requirements as well that are all equally problematic and take up a lot of time. Ideally, the summer, which has obviously ended, but the summer is, I always recommend to people, hey, that's when you want to get your policies and procedures honed. That's when you really want to take the time to tell, you know, you got, let's say you got 10 people in your department, you assign one person to, you know, validate claimed exempt organization pays. Another one will look at LLCs. Another one will look at, maybe you do a lot of attorney and settlement payments and stuff. Whatever your problem payees are, and when I'm saying problem payees, I'm talking about the ones that, if you went back and tracked who's generating the most penalties or B notices or your need to make corrections, and you address those proactively, then you're in a much better place where the 1099 part of your job doesn't have to, like, take it over. And then you have time to do all the other wonderful stuff that, you know, Mary helps you with.
Yeah. Yep. But people don't want to, I mean, basically, if you're going to do this really right, 1099s could almost be a year-round job, and, like, very few people are up for dealing with that.
Right. So hence the popularity of webinars, because you can drop in for an hour and a half,
right.
2 hours, learn a lot. And again, it's not, you're not getting what you need to potentially argue your way out of a penalty per
right.
se, but what you're getting is the direction. You're getting someone who's going to point you in the right direction and
right.
say, this, okay, now you know enough, you know, or you take the slides that come with it, like an outline, and you use it, and you go back and you're like, geez, you know, Steve was rambling for 2 hours there. I don't remember everything, but he was covering everything in the planet but the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
And so then you can go back to the outline, you know, you go back to the slides, and like, that's
right.
what he was talking about. So now you can go look that up at irs.gov. And when you do that, by the way, if you're doing this on your own, I never, ever, ever recommend you start with the statutes. I mean, that's the most important thing, which is funny, but the language used to write the code is just ridiculous. And I always recommend you go to you start with the instructions for the forms. Really, the publications are my favorite place to start.
Oh, yeah.
And then from there, you can go to the revenue procedures, the treasury determinations, the notices, and all that stuff. And now you got a really good idea what's going on. And so now you're like, okay, maybe I'm starting to get this. And the problem is, of course, this all changes, and that's why you end up, you know, attending a bazillion webinars or hiring a guy like me or
right.
buying somebody's tax guide or whatever it is, because, you know, you're looking for them to do that for you. And that's completely understandable because, like what Mary was saying, it's a full-time job for me, right?
Right.
So, you know, you have all of your accounts payable responsibilities, and you cannot effectively wear the hat of a tax attorney on top of being an accounts payable professional and expect to get all of your job duties done, or you'll go crazy.
Right.
And so you look to people like Mary, who's going to give you better ideas for how to do your job more efficiently, which also helps free up time, which is something I try to do too, is, you know, I always try to tell my clients or my webinar attendees, I try to give them best practices and tips so they can make their job move more smoothly. But what invariably happens is, come December, yeah, I never had time to get to any of that during the year. Thanks, Steve. That's nice.
Right.
What can you tell me now to get me through filing
right.
season over the next
just tell
of
me
months?
Just answer my question.
Right.
Just
so,
tell me what to put in this box.
Right. And then hopefully I won't get caught. You know,
right.
and I understand that. I get that. That's a reality, but you got to be prepared for, if you're not doing all the other things that you really should be doing, because it's always, it's a pain in the neck to be proactive. There's no question about it. But if you set up a flow and systems that enable that, then when the real pain in the neck is when someone comes in and they set up shop in your office, you got this auditor over there digging through everything in the world, or you got a penalty management's like, how in the heck did accounts payable, how do we end up in a penalty situation like this?
Right.
Whose fault is this? And now you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're pointing fingers at you. Because, I mean, and that's a misconception. So that's another misconception. You know, people are like, oh, my God, am I going to go to prison? You know, yeah. No, you're not. You're not going to go to prison for making a mistake, unless there's one area. It's called the Office of Foreign Asset Control.
Oh, OFAC.
OFAC.
Yeah,
part of the Treasury Department. And if you, for example, accidentally, you know, cut a check to Al-Qaeda or something, yeah, that would be a problem.
Right.
You know, if they sent you, I don't know, you know. Right, so if your organization, maybe you provided some flying lessons or something and you just, you know, willfully just wrote a check or whatever, then you got a major issue on your hands.
Yeah.
but beyond that, you know, there's almost nothing you can do outside of fraud and stuff like that, that in genuinely illegal stuff that is going to cause you to, as an individual, face criminal penalties. But what can happen, though, on a practical sense, as an individual, if the IRS levies some fat multi-thousand-dollar penalty or tens of thousands of dollars of penalties against your organization, realistically, you know, management's not going to be happy about that. You could lose your job.
Yeah.
You know, and so you want to be able to show management, no, look, literally, look, here I have it. This is all the steps I took. And so now I'm going to try to argue our way out of the penalty, you know, or get this auditor out of our hair. And they're going to say, okay, that's better. You know, so, okay, you know, something didn't go right here, but clearly you were at least, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's. So we're going to give you the benefit of the doubt here. And that's what this does on an individual, because a lot of times we forget about that individual level. And you're basically, yeah, I mean, to be fair, there's a lot of CYA here, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you're doing that too.
Yeah. Well, Steve, that was really interesting. We could go on for hours about this, but I know you don't have hours to do that. So I hope that you'll come back and visit with us again.
Yes, of course.
Okay. And I'd like to thank the audience for listening to this podcast. And a special thanks to our sponsor, Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. If you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate this episode, review this episode, subscribe to the series, or even better, share it with your community on LinkBook, Facebook, or perhaps your staff. To be alerted to new episodes, please visit www.ap-now.com and sign up for a free twice-a-week e-zine. It contains tips and news of upcoming AP Now webinars, article postings, and, of course, new podcasts. Thanks again. Hope to see you on another AP Now podcast. Mm-hmm.